For 20 years now, the Birchwood Cafe has served innovative and sustainable food in the Seward neighborhood of Minneapolis. Now Birchwood owner Tracy Singleton and chef Marshall Paulson have come out with a cookbook that helps people get the Birchwood taste at home. Tracy joins us now by phone. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. So for folks who aren't familiar with the Birchwood Cafe, tell us about how you got started. How'd you get interested in sustainable food and in opening your own restaurant?
I did not grow up on a farm. I didn't grow up eating the kind of food that we serve at the Birchwood. I grew up, like a lot of people, had two busy full-time working parents, ate a lot of fast food, a lot of processed food, frozen, boil-in-a-bag, quick-serve type of food. And it really wasn't until I got a job waiting tables at Lucia's Restaurant in the early 90s that I got to discover what real food was. And at Lucia's, I'd worked in restaurants since I was 14, and Lucia's was the first restaurant that I ever worked in where they made all the food from scratch, and they sourced food from local farmers. And it was a very eye-opening experience for me. It was really a transformational experience for me and my relationship for food, you know, as a woman in her early 20s. And when the opportunity for me to open up my own restaurant came about in 1994, then I knew that I would want to have my restaurant based on these same principles of sourcing food based on relationships with people, mm-hmm. with local farmers.
So that was part of your initial philosophy.
Yes,
of the restaurant.
That was an important part from day one, was making food from scratch, sourcing from local people, local producers. And the other part is we really wanted it to be a neighborhood, very family-friendly, casual place. Because, you know, back when we opened over 20 years ago, there weren't many places where you could go and enjoy, you know, really high-quality, you know, local farmer-sourced ingredients that weren't more of a special occasion place. We wanted to have an everyday neighborhood place people could feel really comfortable just stopping in anytime, bringing their kids, really casual community place. Mm-hmm. So those were kind of the main tenets of early Birchwood philosophy.
Okay. And I noticed in your book, in the introduction, there's something called What is Good Real Food? And I really liked this description. I'm wondering if you would read that from the cookbook for our listeners.
Oh, I'd love to. Yeah, Good Real Food has been our tagline since about day one. So at the Birchwood, we create fresh, unique food with down-home appeal. We source local, sustainable, organic, and fair trade ingredients to lovingly handcraft a variety of vegan, vegetarian, and non-vegetarian dishes. We take care to know that the land, the animals, and the people we work with are all treated with respect, and we call it good, real food.
I like that so much.
It really
gives you, and then, of course, in the cookbook that our listeners can't see, there's a whole list of bullet points underneath that they'll just have to get a hold of a copy and read it.
Yeah, that's really, the meaning has evolved for us over the years, too. So, you know, as the more we become aware of, you know, how the food system really works, and the more that we know, more information becomes available, and the more things that, you know, our customers care about, then that affects how we do our sourcing.
Mm-hmm.
So, we're always responding and evolving to what our customers care about and what's important to them.
Yeah, I guess that was one of my questions, is how has your initial philosophy about food changed over time? And you're saying that you've gotten even more sensitive to localness, for example?
Well, I think to localness and just sustainability practices, you know, you could buy local food, but, you know, how is that local food grown? Were they using chemicals? What type of seeds, you know, is it GMO seeds that we're using, you know, and that's been a big thing. You know, more and more of our customers are just, I just think people in general, our whole country, is more aware of the importance of knowing where our food comes from. And again, as our community and our customers become more aware, then that puts pressure, and I don't mean that in a bad way, on us to just kind of keep up and keep evolving and just keep refining our sourcing as we go, so we're making, you know, the best choices that we can for, you know, for ourselves and for our community.
Mm-hmm. And I like that's a big part of your cookbook is photos and stories of some of your suppliers and the places mm-hmm. that you get the different ingredients. I think that's a really neat addition to a cookbook.
Yeah, if you told me that, you know, tomorrow I had to go back through sourcing the way most of the restaurants I've worked at in my younger life sourced, you know, where you just probably today you can go onto a computer, never talk to a human, place all your order, it will show up in one truck, you know, frozen or ready to serve. I just would have no interest in that. I mean, it's the building the relationships and making those connections and then sharing those stories with our customers, because, you know, not everybody, and I totally get this, not everyone has time to you know, get to know a farmer, or, you know, or to shop at a farmer's market, and not everyone has access to a co-op either, you know, so we're just trying to show people there's lots of different ways to make food with the relationship part of your life.
Mm-hmm. So Tracy, the Birchwood opened in, you said, 1994?
1995.
When
we opened, yep.
Why a cookbook now? Is it a 20th anniversary effort, or tell us about that?
Well, it was nice that it worked out that the cookbook came out at our 20th anniversary, but really, you know, the idea for the cookbook, our cookbook photographer, she's really amazing, Meta Nielsen, and I have been friends. She's been a customer since, you know, day one. So we had this idea for a cookbook starting about maybe 15 or 16 years ago, and you know, we finally figured out getting a contract with the University of Minnesota Press, but then I had a daughter, and that sort of was a bit of a distraction from the process, and then, you know, our chef, Marshall Paulson, he had a daughter, and in the middle of that, we had a, you know, huge Kickstarter campaign and a major remodel and renovation of the cafe. We spent a whole year going through the zoning process to get the proper zoning, so we just had things kind of come up that put the cookbook on the back burner, if you will, and then, you know, last year we just made a real concerted effort to, you know, we're going to get this thing done by our 20th anniversary, and we did, so it feels really great to have it out there.
I bet. So I mentioned, of course, the stories of suppliers and growers. There's gorgeous photos in there. Tell us how the book is organized, because it's in 8 parts, which I think is pretty clever.
Yeah, when we were first talking through, you know, Beth Dooley co-wrote the book with us. She's a very well-known cookbook author. And when the four of us, Marshall, Beth, Meta, and I would meet, you know, we were trying to figure out how are we going to structure this cookbook? Are we going to do it by, you know, breakfast, lunch, dinner, dessert? Or will it be the standard, you know, winter, spring, summer, fall? Or will it be by vegetable or protein? You know, we're trying to come up with all these different ways. And as we were doing this and talking through it, I really want to give credit to our chef, Marshall, for this idea. We started to realize that, you know, just because the calendar says spring, it doesn't mean that our farmers have asparagus or strawberries or any of those kinds of foods that we typically associate with spring, right? So
exactly.
We respond and we build our menus all based on what our farmers' availability is. So one year we could have, quote, our spring menu could start in late March. And then we've had years when our spring menu can't start till mid-June. And then we also, once we kind of realized that, we started to look at how the availability changes over the year. And we came to realize that there really are what we recognize as 8 distinct seasons of the year. So that at times that the food that we can get and the availability shifts from our farmers. So we decided, well, you know, so we started doing our menus at the cafe that way. We used to change them every month. And so then we decided, why don't we change them with our 8 seasons? And that would be a wonderful framework for the cookbook. So that's where we came up with that idea. And it's challenging because it's, you know, you can plan ahead all you want, but if the weather doesn't cooperate or, you know, the fields don't cooperate, then you're sort of shifting. Like right now we just recently switched into our winter menu. Although, you know, on the calendar, I think winter starts, is it December 21st or mm-hmm. something, like, you know, so our seasons don't necessarily match the calendar. They match the availability of what we have here in this Midwest region. Or I guess the North. I guess we're being called the North now. Have you heard about that movement?
I have not. We'll have to get to that later.
Yeah, I know. Anyway.
Well, I have to say that my favorite of the 8 names is Scorch.
Scorch. Oh, yeah. That's my favorite season. I mean, and it was really fun to come up with those names, too. We had a lot of fun brainstorming with that. But Scorch is that time. It comes, you know, right after summer. It's that really hot period of time when, you know, all the heirloom tomatoes are bursting on the vine. The sweet corn is at its, you know, ripest and most sweet. And that's what that season is kind of built around. It's one of the shorter seasons because it doesn't last very long, but it's also one of the most intensely flavorful seasons too. So that usually hits, you know, around August is sometime when Scorch comes along.
Mm-hmm.
And we're getting ready to go into our spa menu is the one that comes after winter. That's also a hopeful sounding name too,
that
right?
That is hopeful. If you just joined us, we're speaking with Tracy Singleton. She's the owner of the Birchwood Cafe in Minneapolis and one of the authors of the Birchwood Cafe Cookbook, just out now from the University of Minnesota Press. So, Tracy, tell us a little bit about why you feel it's important to eat A, in season, and B, locally. What does it do for us and for our community?
Well, I think when we're eating, you know, locally and what's in seasoning, we're getting kind of in tune to our surroundings. I think it's really grounding for us as people, you know, and we're so busy in our society and everybody's running around, you know, with their heads cut off. And I just think something as simple as a really nourishing meal that's sourced really well. And if you can have the appreciation for that, so there's a bit of a gratitude piece that goes along with that for us at the cafe. So if you can put those two things together, I think it's just really grounding for people as humans. I mean, there's the environmental impacts are much lessened when we're eating locally and in season. We're not shipping foods in from all over the place. We are, you know, less travel miles, much lower carbon footprint. I mean, I do want to make the point that, you know, we're not, if we were to only be eating what was locally available right now on our menu, it would be a pretty boring menu. So what we do, we just sort of are, just recognizing, well, what's in season here? Basically, it's what we have available as store crops, right? I mean, we can source our meat and our cheese and dairy and those things locally all year round. But when it comes to fruits and vegetables, that's a little harder. So what we do is we like to also focus on what's seasonal in other parts of the world. So right now it's the height of citrus season. So you have, you know, all these great different kinds of tangerines and blood oranges and all kinds of really great pomelos and grapefruits. So we use a lot of citrus. Even though it's not local, we're highlighting that because it's seasonal in the part of the world that it came from. So we recognize that it's, you know, for us at least, it's not so black and white. You know, just doing even a little bit makes a big difference. And I like to tell people, you know, when they say, you know, eating local is so hard, and I think, you know, just taking that one step. I mean, you could even choose, you know, I'm going to buy local butter, or I'm going to buy, you know, local bacon or whatever it is, you know, that just even doing that one ingredient will have a huge impact. I mean, you're supporting your local economy. I just think it really strengthens the fabric of any community when you have that, when that community is sourcing its food from people who are a part of that community.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's very how we were as humans meant to commune, you know, come together, eat food that we had a part in bringing to the table. You know, we have this Zen meal prayer. When you walk into the Birchwood, right above our counter, we have a Zen meal prayer on the wall, and it's innumerable measures bring us this food. We should know how it comes to us. So really, it's just about knowing, just taking that moment to think about, how did this food come to me? Where is it from? You know, who grew it? How were the animals treated? How was the soil taken care of? How are the farmer's children, you know, how are they fed? You know, things like that, we really care about those at the Birchwood. Mm-hmm. And we invite other people to sort of expand their thinking about food, too. And you can really see that your food choices can have such a broader impact. I mean, of course, when people eat at the Birchwood, they're supporting, you know, our 70-some employees, and they're supporting our immediate neighborhood. But really, you are supporting a much bigger picture. You're supporting a whole outlying community of farm people, and you're making good choices for the planet and helping create a better food system that, you know, so more people can have access to fresh, healthy food. So there's kind of a social justice piece to it. And really, food is a thread, I think, in so many different issues that we're facing, you know, whether it's climate change or how do we take care of the environment. I mean, food is a piece of that. So we just help to hopefully, you know, empower people, help people just think about food in a way that they realize that their choices of food really can make a positive impact.
Yeah, and I like your point that it doesn't have to be all or nothing. I mean, you can start with a small step. You don't have to throw up your hands and say, well, I can't eat everything local, so I'm not going to do any.
Yeah, because that way, you know, we really believe, and I personally believe, and it's one of, you know, the values that we have at the cafe. It's all about what we can do together. It's so much greater than what any one person can do on their own. So if everyone's taking small steps, if you aggregate all those small steps, it makes, that's how change happens, or that's one way change can happen, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I just, you know, think it's a great, food is so essential. It really connects us all. We all eat. And so why not connect to that food that we're eating and have it nourish us and also help realize that we're taking care of, you know, ourselves, each other, our community, and really the whole planet. I think by the we can be doing that if we're making, by the food choices we're making.
Right. So in the few minutes we have left, I'd like to address the recipes themselves. You know, I love cookbooks and I read them all the time, and I've marked more than a couple recipes in this one to try, but the couple that I saw that looked fabulous were the cilantro cashew pesto.
Oh, yum.
The chocolate crinkle cookies and the cherry hazelnut turkey salad.
Oh, yep, that's really good.
And I have to say, the recipes seem fairly straightforward and simple. Is that how the restaurant cooks, or have they been modified significantly for the home user?
You know, we do try to keep it simple because, you know, when you get to work with such great ingredients, you know, they don't need a whole lot to bring out the best in them. But we also like to combine, you know, different unique flavors and things like that. So some of the recipes we did simplify it just a little bit. We didn't want this to be one of those cookbooks that just ends up on somebody's shelf or coffee table and doesn't get used. So we wanted it to be really approachable. And if Marshall were on the phone with us, he would say what's really important for him is he wants people just to try. And if, you know, you don't have, you know, cilantro, you know, substitute whatever herb you do have and just experiment a little bit. I mean, a lot of these recipes we look at as sort of roadmaps to get people started. And where you end up, you know, might be very different than you know, what we would serve on a plate here at the cafe. But yet if you've taken any of our sourcing philosophies into account, and or perhaps you've grown some of the food in your own backyard that you're working with, you're going to end up with, you know, something really delicious and nutritious and good for you. And we want this to be used. So if some of our recipes, you know, call for maybe more hard to get ingredients, we've offered substitutions, and just wanted to make sure that people felt like they could actually work with them and try them.
Sure. How is reception to the cookbook been thus far?
It's been really great. You know, again, because this was such a long process in the making, it's still, I think I'm sometimes still in shock that it's actually out there in the world. But you know, people send me pictures of their savory waffles that they made at home, and you know, tell me about stories of meals that they made, or you'll notice too that some of the different recipes have, you know, stories not just about the farmers, but maybe, you know, about a customer. Maybe it was like that customer's favorite item, and you know, that's what they had at their wedding, or things like that. So it just gives us, a lot of people are sharing the different things and how they're incorporating that into their life, and it's just really fun to hear those stories and hear that it's people really appreciate it, and people really love the design, and they love the photography, and Meta did such a great job, and the U of M Press was really great to work with, and they knew how important it was for me that this really look and feel like the Birchwood, and I've had a lot of people tell me that, oh my gosh, this is just such a Birchwood book, and so that makes me feel like
you hit the mark.
Got what we were going for, exactly.
Well, it is beautiful, but you're right. It'd be a shame if it just sat on somebody's coffee table and didn't get used.
Yeah, no, and we picked this size, and we picked the soft cover because, you know, in the back we have some sections for notes, and I envision people, you know, throwing this in their bag and taking it to the farmer's market, or, you know, just using it to shop with, and, you know, we wanted it to be, it's meant to be in the kitchen, and hopefully ends up, you know, spattered with food and dog-eared, and pages get stuck together, and that's what we want. So
exactly. Well, Tracy, it's been so fun to talk to you. Where can folks go to learn more about the cookbook and the restaurant? You have a website, right?
We do. Our website is birchwoodcafe.com, and our cookbook is available for sale on the website. We can ship it to people. It's also widely available in a lot of different bookstores. I saw it out at the airport last time I was traveling, which was really fun. So it is getting out there in the world, and I'm excited about that. People are interested. I mean, we are on Twitter and we're on Facebook, and we even just started an Instagram account. So, however you'd like to get to know us, we invite you to check us out and let us know. I mean, Marshall always gives out his email to people when he talks about the cookbook. If people have any questions about a recipe or not sure what to do, he's totally open to answering those kinds of questions. And we love getting feedback about how things are working out and how people are serving, you know, the different recipes or innovating on their own. It's been really fun to have that follow-up from people who buy the book.
I bet. Well, thank you again, Tracy, and all the best with the cookbook.
Well, thank you so much for your interest, and I really appreciate you having me on your show.
Thank you.